My name's Warwick Hearn and I'm the chair for this particular session. And the instructions that I have in front of me are very clear. Firstly, that you have to fill in the appropriate forms at the end of the session, so please make sure you do that. And I'm only saying this because I'm being recorded and I'll know whether I said it or not. So, you know, it's important that I do that. Secondly, I'd like to welcome your adventurous nature, because clearly you wouldn't have come here for any other reason to find out what on earth that title really means. And so thank you for coming. We welcome you here. Rather than me describe who Peter is, I was aware that she did a good job of that in her own way, and so I'll leave that to her. So, ladies and gentlemen, Peter Diamantidis.
Oh, thank you. Welcome, welcome. So, to start with me, I started my journey in actuarial studies at Macquarie Uni only a couple of years ago, not really, many years ago, and headed straight into investment banking. I became a specialist in freight railways, would you believe, which is just so uncool. But that's all right, I survived. I got poached by one of my clients and became the corporate finance specialist for an American railroad here, and we bought a whole lot of railways in those years. I then was looking for something different to utilise my finance skills, and so got my graduate degree in financial planning and have now been a financial planner for 10-some years and have become focused on financial literacy as something that we all need to focus a lot of energy on. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. Now, before we get started, please take out your phone, turn it on, open Twitter, and feel free to tweet, take photos and say whatever you like, quote, share. I would encourage you to do that. I'm a bit of a social media geek. For anybody that isn't, I'm happy after the session to show you how to download Twitter and to help you do your first tweet, which will be so exciting you'll run around telling everybody about it. So please feel free to take photos or anything like that. I'm very relaxed about that, and I'd encourage you to join in. So, topic today, the failure of financial services communications. The public are from Mars and we are from Venus. So how do we get here? The general consensus is that due to a fair bit of good management but a whole lot of good luck, Australia came out of the GFC in pretty good shape. The economy was pretty good. We're all looking okay, particularly in comparison to the rest of the world. However, when you look at a grassroots level, the Australian public is full of people who work really hard, earn quite good money, and have nothing at the end of the month to show from it. And they would generally tell you that. They desperately want to get on top of things. They want to get on top of their finances. However, I think everybody here in this room would agree that they're not attacking the financial services industry in droves. We're not having our doors knocked down by people desperately wanting to get on top of our finances or top of their finances. So last year, in our business, we decided we'd get to know them. We'd ask them, why is that the case? So we asked them, how do you feel about the financial services world? And it wasn't good news. Over two-thirds of our survey respondents believe that the finance industry speak in some alien language they will never understand. And I know that seems harsh and horrible and sad, but when we dug a bit further, I think this probably best describes how they feel when we talk, engage, or connect with them. Have you guys ever seen Gary Larson before? That's a Far Side cartoon. I picked that because, in fact, I got sent that by somebody who responded to the survey and said, look, this is awesome. I think it's really glad you're asking this question. This is how I feel about your industry. Oh, good. And I'm afraid it gets worse. Over half of these people we surveyed are crippled by financial paralysis. They procrastinate or outright avoid doing anything about their finances, whether it's paying their bills, sorting out their super, generally getting on top of things, and that's before they even start to think about planning for the future. So understandably, the government and our industry have focused on financial literacy as the cure for this financial paralysis. But we've all spent a lot of time and I believe a lot of money in trying to resolve this, and it hasn't necessarily worked, and I wanted to take a look at that. I've come up with three key sort of driving forces in the market at the moment, or historically, that have been building up that I think have contributed to this. They're a little unusual, so please stick with me, but I think then we can come to some solutions. The first is, I think we need to acknowledge as an industry that it's not about us. When you focus on financial literacy to date, basically we ask the client to learn about our world, to learn to understand our language and our complex products. And we provide them with glossaries and calculators and tools, which is fantastic. We're so enthusiastic. If you go on the web and search any calculator, mortgage calculator, you will get a bajillion responses. However, it still requires the person to step into our world. This is a fundamental mistake. For starters, there's more of them than us, so I'm not sure that's the right way to approach it. We need to turn this around, and we need to dig ourselves out of the complexity and the confusion and speak to them directly as human beings, not as numbers, not as calculators. I mean, they aren't a mortgage calculator. They're people. They want to reduce their stress. So we really need to communicate them with them. This issue of it not being about us, I'm only touching on it here. If you're really keen to get your head around this and understand the client, Andrew Griffiths has written a book called The Me Myth. Now, it's written for an individual to get out of their own head, but I think as businesses, we can all learn a lot from Andrew. He takes a lot of lessons about how we can think outside our own world and add value. So I'd encourage you all to take a look at that. Secondly, a new benchmark has been set. The public's expectation of how companies and products relate to them has been fundamentally changed by these guys and people just like them. As a financial services industry, I would encourage us to stop looking at our competitors and start looking at what these guys are doing, because everybody that deals with us is experiencing joy and elation from these businesses. If you think about the way that people describe their experience with a business like this, and there's lots more of them, they're simple, they're pain-free, they're personalised, they're addictive, they're fun. And I think and while it sounds like it's a newfound drug, I have to admit, and for some of us like me, the apple, the one on the left, is a newfound drug, then the key to take out of this is if we all look at our own financial services businesses, any of those words, simple, pain-free, personalised, addictive or fun, I don't think any of us would get one of those applied to our business, let alone all five. And there's a lesson in that. They don't overwhelm the buyer with complex detail. They inspire them with what they can do with the product, not the features it has. And they make purchase and sign up really easy. So if somebody wants to take action, there isn't a 60-page document to proceed. As an example, let's just take a look. That's straight off the web, off the Mac website. Now, that machine there has more moving parts than I could possibly count. It has a whole lot of scientists and technicians that have been involved, graphic designers, you name it. But that is the image they use to sell it, and it works. Even when we get to the detail, this is what somebody gets to when they're looking at, and I don't understand most of that, I'll happily say that, but that's the sort of detail they get. Now, I'm just going to give you a translation of what I think in the financial services world we would do with that information right there. The MacBook Air was upgraded to Intel's new Ivy Bridge processors up to 2.0 GHz and will come with 4GB of RAM standard, upgradable to 8GB, a 720p FaceTime camera and USB 3.0 and SSDs available up to 512GB. The other good news, they'll be $100 cheaper. That's what we do with that complexity in financial services. We would describe with acronyms in about every fourth word what it was instead of groovy little images and something that's easy to grasp. Now, all of what I just described is exhausting, but if we relate it directly, if you were to have a conversation with a financial planner, which is what I am, the expressions SOA, PDS and FSG would appear on every email, letter and engagement you had. No clients understand what they are. Now, as planners, we've learned to try and translate that. But as an industry, if you were to take a look at a single email that goes out from your business, I guarantee you there'll be three or four acronyms to start with. And as an industry, I think we're getting lazy in this respect. Now, I realise we're talking about financial services and not groovy laptops. I get that there's a difference. But I honestly think that we all know here how important the public getting on top of their money stuff really is and the difference it can make to their well-being. And so I think we have an obligation as an industry to take our best crack at it, to change the way we communicate with the public, and to never stop improving the way we communicate with the public. Now, the third driving force that I think is changing what clients or the public expect from us came to my attention thanks to a TED speaker, Seth Godin. Who knows, who's ever seen anything presented by Seth Godin? Marketing? Anybody? One? No? Good. It'll be new. So Back in 1955, this was the distribution of normal behaviours. We have a graph, folks. We're actuaries. We're going to feel really comfortable with this. So this graph is what spawned the Mad Men heyday. You've got mass marketing sitting for the middle, right? The normal in the middle. That's what mass marketing was designed for. Ads were efficient and they were effective. Anybody outside the box was a weirdo. Greasers and beets being one of them. And those inside it were normal. Now, if we travel forward a little to 1975, the distribution is spreading a little more, but as you can see, the lump of normal in the middle is still pretty big, and the weirdos are still on the fringe, right? And I'm taking this direct from Seth Godin, and I'll give you those details if anybody's interested later. Now, this is what it looks like now. The bell curve has melted. It doesn't exist anymore. The weirdos outnumber the normal, right? And if you were to consider how this relates to us, the examples up there are quite American. I can give you an example 2 days old. Sunday was the 4th of May. Who can tell me what day was celebrated on Sunday? And may the 4th be with you. Back when Star Wars came out in the 70s, people who were fans, I mean, a lot of us would have seen it, but people who were fans were absolute freaks. I mean, they were on the fringe of society. We didn't let them out. We closed the doors. You know, they were really on the fringe. Now, on Sunday, every morning radio show and TV show featured Star Wars Day for the whole show in the country. The freaks have come out. So we all, you know, we all have brought out our inner window and and wave our freak flag high. And it's something that as marketers and as business people, I think we really need to understand and acknowledge. There is no normal anymore. Communication messages can't be done for the middle. They've got to be done for the outside and the individuals. As a community, I think, you know, people generally connect with businesses and products that have become part of their tribe, that we feel are part of us, and therefore we naturally buy from them. Blogs are a perfect example. The mummy blogs are a perfect example of this. Mummy blogs are some of the most powerful people in this country now. The politicians haven't worked it out, but if they got one of those mums on their side, guaranteed election win. They have hundreds of thousands of followers. So people are creating their own tribes. And if, as businesses, we can either get on that bandwagon or we can be left behind. So Seth Godin talks a lot about this in his book, We Are All Weird. And you might not acknowledge it, but we all are. We all have our things that we love or things that are unusual about us. And so I would encourage you all to take a look at that book. It's fantastic and it'll give you some more insight into this. So to revisit then, the three challenges I think that are defining financial literacy and the challenge we as businesses face to connect with the public about money, it's got to stop being about us as an industry. It's got to be about them. A new benchmark of customer service and engagement has been set by industries outside our own. We're going to have to run to keep up. And the bell curve is melted. We've got to connect with the weirdos and not with the normal. So, how do we fix it? What are some solutions? Well, I don't have all the solutions, but I'm going to pose three for you that to get us all starting to think about this. I think the first thing we need to do is start generating more communicators in our industry. We have an industry that I believe is a refuge for technicians. Anybody with technical nous is naturally attracted to this industry, which is fantastic. We need that. But there is no amount of technical expertise which is accessible to the public unless you can communicate it. So we need to hire, develop and reward and really reward great communicators in our industry, and we need to attract more of them. I would argue that, in fact, our industry starts to repel those because technicians are such a large part of it, then the natural communicators start to go towards other industries, which I think is a great loss. I think we really need to focus on that. We also need to immerse ourselves in content marketing. Now, I don't know if any of you have heard of this. This is sort of the new paradigm for large companies and small alike. It's delivering content that your audience is searching for everywhere they look for it. So it's not having a website which has a contact us page and a list of the directors. It's connecting. If your clients are on Facebook, you're on Facebook. If they're on Twitter, you're on Twitter. You connect where they want to be. You find the tribe that works for your business and you join it. It's also the process of developing and sharing relevant, valuable and engaging content to a target audience. And that last word is really important. Content is so hard to write if you're writing it for everybody. if you target it at a particular audience, then it can be so engaging and they connect with it so well. So over time, if you do that, if you use content marketing, then we get to know, like, and trust you. So, and that's the path that people, you know, go through when they buy anything. They get to know you, they check you out, they go, ooh, yeah, I like them, they're okay, and then they trust you enough to buy. That's the journey you want them to take, particularly with something as important as finance. That's how we connect with the weirdos in the places they hang out, and that's how we provide them with the information they need and they want. Now, I've made that sound really easy. I've just described content marketing in about 2 minutes, and I went to a conference for a week, 3 weeks ago. So that's any marketers in the audience, which I'm sure there wouldn't be many, but will know that's really hard to do. This is a new thing that big business is finding very difficult. If you're interested in seeing the way content marketing is working, check out australia.com. That's the Australian travel website by the Australian government, and they get this. So they are connecting with people on their level. When the Mayan calendar, so you remember the end of the world date, whatever that was, where we were all coming up to when the end of the Mayan calendar was going to come in. Australia, of course, was one of the first time zones that was going to go into the next day. Gee, will we all be here? Australia.com tweeted, it's all right, guys, we're still here. That's content marketing. They get it. It's relevant. It's current. It's entertaining. And people connect with that. So I'd encourage you to check them out. I know it's not financial services, but they just understand their audience and they've bothered to work out what interests them. Now, when you do content marketing, the other thing you need to be is really authentic. So I imagine if we were all to pick up a PDS and read it, the last word you would describe is authentic. You'd probably say professional. And formal, and certainly well thought out and well reviewed, but authentic is not something that necessarily comes across, and people can smell that from a mile off. So in our communications, we need to start drawing out our own personality, our own weirdos, so that we can authentically connect with people. Now, what else do we need to do? If I was to use just financial advice as an example, because that's the game I play in, then the normal model, the normal engagement model, looks like this. The client has a policy, some policy, generally super, because their employer signed them up for super. They have a single policy, they have no connection to the product, and they have very little connection to the product provider because somebody else signed them up. Then, somehow, over the course of time, perhaps a great personality advisor that they connect with, perhaps something that happens in their own personal situation, they eventually get to the point where they sign up for some advice, however much that might cost them. It might be $500, it might be $2,000, it might be $10,000. But they go from the left to the right. Now, if we take that out of financial advice, that to me equates to eating a cookie and buying an Ilvi oven. Or going to a movie and then buying an entire entertainment surround sound system. Nobody makes that leap. Nobody buys a cookie and goes, cookie. Must cook by Ilvi oven. It's not the way the brain works, right? We all go on a journey when we buy a product. And I think this is a mistake that we're making in financial advice and I think in financial services generally. So I believe actually what we need to build is an engagement infrastructure for all of our products and services. Now, as it would happen, Apple's done that for us for their products. So we'll take a look at what they've done. iTunes, free product. I don't know whether you remember when you only had iTunes, but you uploaded iTunes, you start putting in your CDs, woo, that's pretty cool, and I can sort myself out, and I can do playlists, and I can, that's pretty awesome, you know, nobody's done this before, I think I'll get an iPod. Wow, that thing's really slim, and it fits right in my pocket, and it's such a nice colour, and it's got that little roundy thing, and it's easy to use in my hand while I'm running, you know, it's really cool, I think I'll get an iPad, because then I can play with the music while I'm watching TV, I can look at Safari, and my wife can read a book. Awesome. Ultimately, where they want you to go is the iMac. That's their core product. They want you to know, like, and trust them due to iTunes, iPod, iPad, the iPhone. Ultimately, they want you to buy the iMac. Now, I'm going to test that here. And sorry, then they have some other services that are whether it's support services or software and things like that that are add-ons. I want to test this theory. In your households at the moment, I want you to go through the inventory and count how many different Apple products you have. So if you've got two iPods, that's just one. Just how many of those different things, iTunes, iPod, iPad, iPhone, iMac, or laptops you have in your head. So let's start. Who has one or more of Apple's products? Okay, keep your hands if you've got two or more. Three or more? Freaks like me, who's got four or more? Lots. The infrastructure works, guys. We all did that because we gradually got to know, like, and trust them. So, if we take a look at what the actual... Oh, but absolutely, the kids, but it's the same thing applies. It's a really valid point. But the same logic applies. The kids start with that little thing and they'll head all the way to the end. I guarantee you, you're all going to have, Mom, I want an iMac at some point in the near future. So an engagement infrastructure then is what's called an ascending transaction model. That's what this model's called. It starts with a free gift. It then moves to a product for prospects. That's where they get their feet wet. It's a low-cost entry level. They get to know you. They realise how smart or clever you are or how engaging, and then they hit the core product. If you're keen to know more about that, then Daniel Priestley's written about this in his book called The Entrepreneur Revolution. And by the way, these people I'm referring to, if you tweet me later, I will send you a link to all of these details or an email for those who don't tweet. But Daniel outlines this in more detail. But it is a structure that means that people go as far as they're comfortable with and you make money out of them getting to your core product. People pay for those product for prospects. So instead of paying for marketing and sales to only get to your core, they're paying you for marketing and sales to get to their core. I just want that to cogitate for a second, because I think if we can actually replicate this in some small way in financial services, I think we might hit the jackpot there. So, how do we do this in financial services? I'm not sure I'm going to do the hard work for you, because it's different for every one of your businesses, but I will tell you how we're doing it in financial planning in our business, and that might give you some ideas. Free gifts are easy to do. That's checklists, your blog, tips and tricks, videos, all those sort of things that you have on the web, but importantly, they need to be shareable, so therefore they probably need to be on social media. The more people can share those things, the more people you get coming into your infrastructure. Now, when we took a look at what gets people to the point of seeking out advice, we realised that educating them, inspiring them, motivating them was fundamental. So our product for prospects actually starts with my book, Finance Action Hero, which was the strange title that you all saw in your lanyards, and includes seminars, apps, other resources they can choose to purchase. We've also created an online location for the tribe to collect. Anybody that wants to get on top of their finances in a simple, engaging and fun way will be part of the Zaptitude tribe. So all of that is our product for prospects. It's what they get. They get to know us. They get to feel us out. $24.99 and they get started. This is also where we realised that we'd misunderstood the next step, where we misunderstood the role we play in our clients' lives. Financial advice, and I mean the legislative definition of financial advice here, wasn't going to be our core product as it turned out, which surprised us no end. The core product we're offering or rolling out actually in the next few months is going to be a 3-month coaching program where we hold their hand through the process of getting on top of all of their finances, working together potentially as couples and defining the future they want. They want to be 6 months in Paris and 6 months in Sydney. Let's work out how you're going to do that. Where do you want to live? What do you want to do? How are you going to do it? How many kids? Where are they going to go to school? All the planning of life so that then they're ready to approach an advisor to work out how to finance and how to get it done. So what that ended up with is that our financial advice ended up in the logical next step, which is strange, right? Because I'm a financial advisor and that's ultimately was previously my core business. But what we've realised is if I can get people's heads right about finance, if I can get them to get the basics sorted, then imagine them approaching all of the financial services industry knowing what they want, where they want to go, what they're missing, and how valuable financial advice is. Once you understand what you're missing, that's when you value it. That's when you'll pay for it. Whereas I think at the moment with financial literacy, we're trying to tell them something that they don't value yet. I think they need to learn that. So I think by empowering them, then not only will they feel fantastic, but I think we'll have more fun. We'll be having great clients that are attacking us wanting to get looked after, not where we have to convince them. I mean, if you look at insurance marketing, that's convincing. That's trying to basically turn somebody around from why would I need that to okay, if I have to.
I mean, that's really as far as they get, right? They don't go, woohoo, I really want insurance. I mean, that'd be good, but they never do, right? So we really want them to be, I must have. I have worked out what my current plan is. I've worked out where I'm going, and I need this now, and I want you to do it. That's where we're hoping to get to with this product infrastructure. Now, I'm not going to say that we've nailed all of this. We literally launched the book last Thursday. So this is a start of a journey. We've had so much interest in it, though, that I think we're onto something. The public is really responding to connecting with them at their level. I'm happy for you to come up and have a look at the book, and I'll even happy to throw a few out for people who ask questions. But we're talking about things like credit cards are evil minions, spend less than you earn. Now, people in this room may think that that's insane, but the number of people as a financial advisor I have to turn away because they have such a big credit card debt, there is very little I can do for them. I can tell them what they should be doing, but I can't do anything. This is trying to solve that. So, to revisit the challenges we're all facing, which are a bit different to what we might have acknowledged, it isn't about us. We need to really get out of our heads in that way. It is about the public. Those crazy businesses out there have set the new benchmark for us. We can't avoid that. We can't ignore it. We need to step up and engage in a similar way. There's a lot of others. Zappos is a great one. If you're interested in businesses doing things differently, check out Zappos, Zappos. There's so many. Anybody who connects with me on email or Twitter, I'm happy to share more of these with you if you want to learn who's doing it well. And the bell curve is melted. We need to connect with the weirdos, not with the normal. There's just not enough normals to go around anymore. So in terms of the solution, I task all of you to develop more communicators in your business. Start hiring them, start rewarding them, and start promoting them. If you think about where communicators generally reside, it's in marketing teams, and depending on the business, often that's something that's seen as an ancillary part of the business. It's not the core. It needs to become the core. These people need to be representing the client in your business and fighting hard for them. And when we produce a document that's about the next product, they're the first people that see it, and they beat us up because it doesn't make any sense. We really need to start to change the way we look at these things. Immerse yourselves in content marketing. There's another great book I'll send out on the link that's about understanding what that is. It's literally telling stories. That's what content marketing is. It's about finding the story that connects with your customer and telling it well. Whether it's on Facebook or on Twitter or on a video blog, it's your CEO, it's your payroll person, it's anybody in the team can be part of that. The better they connect, the better they'll be. And I guess I'd say that too, is that content marketing doesn't need to be the senior personnel. It can be whoever you think has the right personality to connect with the public and is potentially most like them. So take a look in your business and have a think about who has that, and it may be the intern. As long as you train them well enough and you brief them well enough, they could develop into a great communication resource for your business. Thirdly, build an engagement infrastructure for your products and services. This is not easy. It's taken us 9 months to get our head around the structure I put up before because it forces you to rethink exactly what you do and why. And I recognise there are businesses a lot bigger than ours that are here. You guys probably represent some fairly large businesses, but I think that giving somebody a funnel that they go down, a journey that they experience with your business that involves them incrementally committing more and more over time before they get to the core just makes so much sense. And I think it's something that Apple and a lot of other businesses could teach us a lot about. So I hope that's been useful. There are all my contact details. I'm happy for any or all of those for you to contact me. Anybody that contacts me on any of those, I will then send a landing page with the links of all the books and the resources, the slides, even details on the book if you're interested. So I'll include all of that. So please don't hesitate to get in touch. I'd love to speak to you. And I'd even just like to connect on Twitter or LinkedIn if that's something that you'd like. So we've got lots of time for questions, I'd imagine. Like I said, anybody who wants a question gets a book. I know you guys don't need it, but perhaps you have kids or friends or relatives that have a massive credit card debt that you can then solve, hopefully, with the book. So far away.
Very good. Thank you, Peter. Yes, would you mind using the microphone in the centre? Thank you.
Hi, Jennings Sparks. How do we get around the regulation? I've thought for a long time Australia is making it difficult to connect with the public.
Yep.
Because we're required to do all of these statements and you've got to read through all of this literature.
Yeah.
It's just really hard for people in
and
out there.
And frustrating. Really frustrating. It is hard. What I'd say, I actually got asked this before, what I'd say is that, you know, the regular ASIC, the thing is that these guys can only operate in things they can measure. So if ASIC was responsible for the happiness of all Australians, they couldn't just say, go be happy, right? They'd have to say, you're going to have to go for a walk for 20 minutes every weekday, and on every Saturday and Sunday, we want you to start and finish the day with a belly laugh. You know, they'd have to do something that can be calibrated, measured, reported on. And hence, we get what we get with legislation. They need something they can count, measure, assess, review, report, and, you know, slap wrists where necessary. So I agree that they can be a struggle, but what I'd say is that they're desperately asking for this as much as anybody. So they recognise that their hand has been forced by the lack of communication by this industry. I actually think we're responsible for this, not the legislator. If we were better communicators and we gave people back their common sense about money, you know, that real gut sense about what's right or wrong, things like Storm would be less likely to happen. You know, I mean, that's what it comes down to. Now, some people will get taken and that's awful. But the more we get people empowered to understand their own finances, not come and ask somebody like me, sort me out. That's what I get a lot of, you know, please just sort me out. They should be coming to me saying, Peter, we want to retire at this age. We want this much money when we retire. We just need you to set that up for us, please. So I think empowered engagement will make the regulator's job easier. And I think then they'll respond accordingly. I actually think they'll start to acknowledge that there's a driving revolution of financial literacy that is doing part of the job for them. So that would be my angle. I completely understand. I mean, SOAs, it's just hideous. And the poor clients hate it. But I think we're responsible ultimately. I just don't think we've been doing a good enough job.
Peter, if I could just add briefly to that. What we've done here is separate the pre-advice from the advice. So we, if you like, in quotes, got round the regulation problem by not trying to respond specifically to an individual circumstance, but rather recognise we could separate what we did into two parts, the pre-advice part, which is about education, training and teaching, and the advice part. And so I think there's a lot in that separation for the industry. Yes, I saw some of this. Thanks.
Eric Ranson.
Hi, Eric.
I had a couple of questions.
Ooh.
The first one was a very simple one. Does Seth Godin come from Portland? Because about 10 years ago I saw somebody walking through the airport in LA with a T-shirt that said, Keep Portland Weird. And
He has a bald head. I don't know where he's from. He's very identifiable. I have no idea. I'm going to have to check now. I'm going to write that down.
Was one of my favourite T-shirts ever, I think. I think following on from that question, it seems to me that part of that sort of stepped approach is, and the part that Apple probably does pretty well, is to actually keep a kind of consistency of format and a kind of...
The experience.
That's the same, which is pretty hard to do when you kind of get towards the end and you step up and there's a you know, PDS or an information memorandum or something like that. Did you have any, you've probably thought through some of those issues and maybe had some comments on that?
Yes, so I think it's a very good point. And in fact, it's a bit like a cold slap in the face, isn't it? So, wow, it's been really good to engage with you guys. There's the SOA, you know, like... So I can see it in my client's face. Seriously? So it is a challenge. I think what we do is really frame it that way. So we literally talk about things as there's a lot of red tape involved in this process. This is there to protect you. And in fact, I've even written things like red tape on top of it so that mentally they're in a space that's, okay, this is going to get a bit ugly, but it's all right. Peter's saying that we can get through the end of this. So I still think, you know, a hand-holding process can mean that some of these legislative requirements, while difficult, can be easier. I also think that there's so much technology that can help with this. I don't think we're using that enough. So if you think about Amazon, and I didn't really go into them, you know, I'm sure everybody here's probably bought a book or something on Amazon. No? Right, so when you do, you buy something on Amazon, they ship it out to you. Yay. Within about a week of you buying it, they send you an email saying, Hi, Peter, thank you for buying your book. Here are four other books you'd like. And they're right every time. I always buy at least one of those books. If you want to go for world domination, follow Amazon. So what they do is personalise all those communications. There are some complexities behind the scenes of what they do instead of payments. And I mean, they actually print those books on demand. The whole actual production is quite full on for Amazon. But from the client's perspective, it's easy, it's fun, and I get more books, you know. So I think it is a challenge, all of the paper, but we use lots of graphic elements in our SOAs as an example, so I just don't take the prescription as given. I add more, I engage more, we use videos, we use all sorts of stuff to make it more of a journey. I do think the other thing we've got to do with some of the legislative requirements is piecemeal them a bit. Nobody can absorb 60 pages of anything. Even us. I mean, when we're studying, it just doesn't happen, right? You can only do it in short bolts. So I think there's an element to which we sort of need to throw it all up in the air and go, okay, the legislative environment is this. This is what they're looking for. They've given us some structure because we didn't have it. Throw it up, work within the legislative environment, and let's just see what we can come up with. Should we be doing this thing we do last first? Should we be doing that as an online survey first? Should we, like, let's just challenge the way we engage and use that entire legislative framework? Because I actually think ASIC could be ecstatic with that. I don't actually think they really want to be too prescriptive. I mean, I'm sure you've all noticed that, right? They only sort of say the general. They don't want to be too prescriptive because they want us to come up with the magic. So I think that's what we need to do more of. Anybody else?
Thank you. Another?
Oh.
Yes.
Andrew Francis.
Hi, Andrew.
Just a question. You talked about needing communicators and actually learning more about customers and sort of taking them at face value, not how we think they need to behave.
Yeah.
It sort of seems to me that sort of behind the scenes in insurance companies and the industry broadly, it sort of runs deeper than that. For instance, you know, you touched on putting products out there and just, you know, getting people to understand them. But all in the ways that we're dealing with customers, I think we need to change along the way. So, for instance, moving from a sort of setting and forgetting products and underwriting processes and sort of fixing them in time and sort of not really looking at them for a couple of years,
Yeah. Getting
much more curious about
how people are connecting with them.
Yeah, what's working, what's not working, sort of testing and learning.
Yeah.
Do you have a view about
that?
Yeah,
I do. So particularly with insurance, I think, I mean, we need to remind people why they got it in the first place. Because generally if they've gone and bought, like, full suite, I'm talking, you know, the gamut of every T, P, M, you name it, they've bought it. Come the next year and they get that statement, they want me to pay how much? We need to remind them why they were doing that. And so I think there's an obligation to an ongoing connection with that. And I actually think insurance companies are undervaluing their underwriters. Underwriters are cool cats, right? I mean, these people have seen all sorts of stuff and experienced all, I mean, via the individuals that they work with and the claims people too. I mean, they see all sorts of things. I think we need to open the box and let them out and let the public connect more with the underwriters and the claims people. Because, I mean, when I talk to them, you know, the stories they can tell. And to be frank, you'd only need to hear a few of those stories and you'd get every insurance possible. So I think we've got some great resources. Now, perhaps, you know, for some of them, they're going to need to be convinced of that. Maybe they don't want to stick their head up. But I think if we can really explain to them how they can connect more with the public, and it will mean that their product will be more valued and provide so much a wider impact on the public, I just think that would be fantastic. I think we've got to stop letting them hide. I hope that answers your question. Yep.
Thank you, yes.
Peter, Mike Murphy from Aon Hewitt.
Hi, Mike.
Could you tell me a bit more about your core product, the Financial Freedom Bootcamp?
Yes.
And in particular, the upsell from that, which you detailed, obviously, comprehensive plan services, but
yes.
I must admit, Bootcamp 101 followed by 201 and 301 sounds.
So the bootcamp, so the 3 month, thank you for the question, the 3 month bootcamp, and it's currently set at 3 months, we may make it 6 months. What we're going to be doing is taking them through, first of all, basic training, which is what the first book is about. So, and I haven't been, everybody that's asked a question, please come up afterwards and I'll give you a book. So basically it takes them all the rules of the money universe. What do you need to know? There is no easy money. Anybody who says it's easy is selling you a scam. Credit cards are evil minions. Spend less than you earn. Waste is stupid. So all of the stuff that our grandparents knew, if our great grandparents could give us lessons, basically that's the 10 things we cover in basic training. And we go through it via experiential learning, so we're not lecturing to them. It's them seeing how this can evolve. Things like getting in, so waste is a big thing. We all waste about 30% of the food we buy, which is a good few grand every year, at least, depending on how much of a foodie you are. So if we can change that by getting in a chef who will talk through how to waste less food, how to store it, what cuts to buy that are cheaper, then we have changed the behaviour without using the word budgeting once. So that's the experience they'll get in the basic training part of the boot camp. Then we'll take them through a money personality experience where they work out which of four animals they are in terms of the way they behave with money. This is really useful for couples. You know, one can be somebody that woohoo and they'll be bungee jumping investing, and the other one's the money under the mattress. So we draw that out for a couple and then work on strategies they can use in their life together of how to manage that. And then we get them to think about the future, and I'm not talking about financially, literally path out exactly what they want. If money wasn't an option, what would they be doing in a reasonable sense? And we get them to map that out. We make it a very graphical thing. Then we work with them on how they can get in their own way. What are they going to do to mess it up? What do they think they need to do to get there? And we put together their plan of action with them. Now, none of that is financial advice. However, if you think about it, the other thing we cover actually is contingency planning. Okay, guys, so you've got this plan. What could go wrong and how are you going to cope with that? Naturally, insurance falls into that, yeah? I mean, that's what insurance is. It's contingency planning. So we pull all of that together with them, and then they're going to have a document they could take to any advisor in the country and say, I want that. Please set it up for me. So that's a very short description of the boot camp. Does that answer your question?
Any more?
Yes.
Paul, would you use the mic? Thanks.
The big brother wants to record.
Yeah, no problem. So when you showed the content marketing and that was targeting a particular tribe through, fundamentally it seemed to me through a social media type process or outlet.
Can be.
And then we saw the bell curve and how that's flattened out. I can associate that with probably the under 40s.
Yep.
But fundamentally, I can't see how the bell curve has changed for the above 40s, 45 age group. And if you look at Apple and you look at the Amazon market, that has targeted the younger people and the younger generations. And it is evolving up the line.
Okay.
But
yeah.
If you come up with this marketing strategy, yes, I can see that you would be targeting the under 40s or under 45s, and that's building a long term, but you might be missing out in the, from a financial planning perspective, the massive dollar market currently?
Sure. This is a very good question. So just to highlight a couple of things, the biggest sign-ups of Facebook are over 55, by number and by percent. The only people that connect with me on Facebook for our business are the over 65s who are travelling and want to tell me about all of their trips in their Winnebago, particularly when we encourage them to. So I do agree that certainly the younger generations are more naturally connected with those things. But what I'd say is that the older generations, I think everybody wants to connect. So really what content marketing is, it doesn't need to be in social media. It could be a flyer. It could be a seminar. So the medium can be anything. But it's about targeted information to an audience, engaging with them about relevant content. So what it isn't is, it's tax season and you should do your return, right? The stuff that we need to do for content marketing is about the people we know. So a great database will be divided into 18 different categories, so that if you were sending something out about tax time, at least the banner would be slightly different for every group you were sending to that might appeal to them. You might have golfers in one and there'd be something about the latest golf win or competition, or you might. So it's about connecting with people on what they're interested in and in a way that interests them. So almost creating hooks. So I do agree that there's more social media interest in the younger generations, but the take up is higher in the older ones. So there's an opportunity for people taking an early step in this to capture that market, actually. So I think it's a real opportunity. And I think also something I'd say, and I'm only repeating what my clients tell me, but they really don't like the way financial services represents their industry, their section of the market. The grey nomads really bothers them. So it's something I'd just take away with you, is that the imagery of the retired couple in the car, and they don't think like that. They don't see themselves as ending or changing or they see themselves as having a hell of a lot of fun with a whole lot of money. So I think, now I'm not necessarily saying we should encourage that, but I think we need to stop being automatic about the way we market to a group and really bother to understand them. I mean, ultimately, content marketing is getting your head right into your, you know, right into your audience's world. I mean, I've let them into my world. I'm a massive Star Wars geek, and in fact, my biggest fandom is Despicable Me. I love those movies, and I particularly love the Minions, right? They make me belly laugh. Well, I shared that with my clients on Facebook. They now all post things they see around the world onto our Facebook page. Peter's going to love this. Share it with her. Now, does it have anything to do with financial services? No. But do they feel connected to me? Definitely. So I know that didn't quite answer your question, but I think we can challenge ourselves to find ways to connect with all generations in that sense. And if it means it's more paper-based and more tactile, then so be it. It's still the same sort of logic. Anybody
else? We could
probably
do just one more if somebody else.
Anybody else? No. Oh.
Go for it.
Janice Jones. I'll go a bit off topic. The federal government seems to think that we can do your coaching for primary school age children and that will solve all their financial literacy problems.
Yep.
And that teachers will deliver that. Mm-hmm. My experience as a parent and friend of teachers is they need to read your book.
Yeah.
The teachers, before they try and pass it on to children. But do you see any value in imposing that into the education system, or is it better left until people are working?
I think actually you could look at it a bit like the infrastructure I'd developed. So there'd be seeds you'd plant. But actual financial literacy, no, because they're never going to get posted a credit card for $5,000 they'd ever asked for. I mean, that's the biggest challenge we have in this industry in terms of literacy, is how somebody responds to that single bit of post. Do they throw it? Do they use it? Right? That has defined our entire market. Available credit is why we're all in this position, the public are. So I think we could plant seeds. I don't think it needs to be teachers though. I mean, I think there'd be a lot, I mean, I'd be ecstatic to go out and meet with kids and come up with a way that's more that experiential learning. I mean, if you think about interest, which from a calculation sense is well beyond kids at that age, the concept of putting more money in and there being a bit more when they go back in a week, kids are going to get. Right, they are not silly. So I think there'd be some experiential learning stuff you could do early on that could really plant some fundamental seeds that would be really valuable when we then try and hit them when they come out of school or around uni. So I think there's some little bits we could do, but I don't think it needs to be teachers.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Peter.
Thank you, guys.
Would you thank Peter in the normal way?
Thank you. And questions, come up and get a book.